Welcome back to Megawatts and Microphones. Today, we have a very interesting topic. Why we cannot use only solar panels and wind energy to power all of our needs. And for that, we have a very special guest. And I'm so excited to have him here in our episode because he is my supervisor of my master's degree. We have Dr. Andrew Rowe. Dr. Rowe, he is the go-to person when we are talking about renewable and intermittency and how to balance the grid, which we'll talk about that in the episode. So, Dr. Rowe, if you would like to introduce yourself.
Okay, thanks, Laura. So, as Laura said, my name is Andrew Rowe. I am a professor in mechanical engineering, and I'm also the director of a research center at the University of Victoria, which is called ICEVIC, the Institute for Integrated Energy Systems.
Okay, Andrew, so we'll jump right in with the big question, which is generally, why can't we use 100% wind and solar energy? We see a lot of information about why we want to get away from fossil fuel power, from coal power. So why are solar and wind not just the silver bullet solution to all of our problems?
Yeah, this is a really good question. It's such a complicated question. It's fun to talk about. So, you know, I think we know that really what we're trying to do with energy systems, and we're going to talk about electricity in particular, is that demand really drives everything we build. So people doing what they do and switching on lights and using their appliances and things like that, they do it when they want to. And this is the type of service or the high quality service that a lot of people expect. So the point being is now we need to start thinking about the chain of events, and these chain of events to make those lights go on are all driven by what's happening by the person at the end of the line. So demand, being the person driving everything, has a certain variability to it. We do things at different times of the day, and we ask for different amounts. And because of that, if we were to, you know, aggregate a bunch of houses together or cities or communities, we would, you know, we could put a little meter down and say what's going on with electricity demand at any instant in time. And it typically goes up and down, and it'll go up and down over the day, or it'll go up and down over a week or over the year. So we have seasonal variations, and how it actually looks will depend where we are in the world. So northern countries have different needs and different demands driven by the northern climate, as compared to something near the equator or some locations that are in between, like much of the United States. So right away we've got some variability, and we don't control that. This is something that we really just respond to. People do what they want when they want. And so in the past, the traditional electricity system would have a number of resources available connected somewhere along the line, along these distribution and transmission networks, which would respond to an operator demand to increase or decrease. And that's how we would match this time-varying demand with a time-varying supply. So now, of course, the question was about renewables, and wind and solar in particular being the ones that we really are seeing deployed now. And we'd like to deploy as much as we can because of the characteristics that we value now and the decarbonization opportunities. Problem is just like demand is regionally specific and temporally specific, so varying as a function of where you are and time of year, these resources, wind and solar, also vary in a similar manner. Depending where you are and depending on the time of the year, they're going to have their own characteristics. The availability of those resources is something we don't control. So unlike our traditional way to make things balance instantaneously, moving the throttle up and down on a generator, it's not easy to do that with a renewable resource like solar and wind. So if you think about this from its basic, you know, this basic structure I just described, to try and meet 100% of the demand using a single resource like solar, it just isn't going to work because solar is just not there for about 50% of the day as a starting point. Well, we can then think about, well, what about wind? Why not 100% of wind? Well, wind's got its own challenges, and its variability can be a little harder to predict than solar. But there's certainly times when it's not windy, and often people like to build communities in places where there's not constant wind. So you know, the, I guess the short answer to your question is we just have a mismatch typically between the demand and the supply if we think about purely solar and wind as resources.
And what can we do now that we know that we cannot have solar energy during the night because obvious reasons, or wind power whenever we want to, because it, this is very depends on like the location, what time of the day, the season, etc. What can we do in order to have that energy that was generated at that certain time whenever we need it?
Yeah, that's exactly you know, the question I think that a lot of people in a lot of places and jurisdictions are asking. So how do we make this work? The physics and the characteristics of demand have this mismatch problem. So how do we make the match happen, right? And there are a number of different ways to try and make it happen. So storage is, electricity storage is a popular answer that comes up right away, because storage, the nature of storage is it's there to provide temporal matching of things, whether it's electricity or other things, any sort of commodity we might want that, that has some variability in supply and variability in demand. And an obvious example that goes way back would be something like food. So we're lucky in that nature, you know, farms typically are productive in the summer, but the products of a farm, we learned how to store those to get us through those winter months when things weren't growing. So there's this storage component that's built into all sorts of different aspects of how a society runs. So electricity, of course, we understand how storage is valuable for other things. Well, why don't we use it for matching supply and demand with electricity? And that's happening. And so there's all sorts of storage technologies we might want. There's other ways to do it though too. So one way you could try to help reduce this problem of variability is to diversify. And this aspect, it's just like an investor diversifying a portfolio, because there's so much variability perhaps with one company in returns. Well, I'll buy in a number of different areas, a number of different sectors, so that I can try to get a less variable and positive return. The same principle could be used to help balance electricity. I'll invest in some solar, I'll invest in some wind, and I'll do that in different locations as well. So that might help to dampen out the big extreme variations you might have in one location. We can now use trade of electricity to help solve that problem. And so that means usually we have to build transmission and distribution infrastructure to do that. The other way we could do it is to actually tell people or change demand. So that gets a little trickier. Can we make the demand match the supply? So in the past, it was always, let's match demand by changing our supply. Well, now we don't have that option if we're thinking about wind and solar, especially without storage. If we have storage, maybe we can do that. But without storage, now the solution might be, okay, let's try and solve some of the problem by actually modifying demand. And that could be done in different ways. Signals to people to say, hey, don't charge your car now, or don't use your appliance now, use it later, because we know later we're going to have a lot of wind that's available because our forecasting says it's coming. So if we have some ways to motivate the change in behavior, that's another way to help get this balance to work. All of them on their own probably aren't, you know, each one of those options probably doesn't solve the problem, but perhaps the combination of those could really go a long ways towards solving it. And of course, if we have a lot of cheap storage technologies available, that on its own could go a long ways to helping solve the mismatch problem.
So Andrew, you're talking a lot about how some energy sources can be turned on and turned off whenever we want, and others of them just come when they're there, like wind and solar. So can you explain a little bit more about the differences there, and maybe where renewables lie on either side of that spectrum?
Yeah, that's a good question, Graham. So, and I think there's probably three words that we need to talk about and define. So dispatchability, intermittency or variability, and then the firmness. So firm power or firm supply, firm resource is a phrase that's used by utilities. And there's some nuances between them. So dispatchability generally is used to describe do I have control over the output of a resource or a generator? Can I dispatch it? Meaning, can I on command ask it to move up or down? And can I, and then we get into various levels of detail about how dispatchable it is, how quickly can I move it up and down? And so, you know, this gets into some technical complexities, but that word is meant to indicate that I have control, some control, and the more I can move it and the faster I can move it, that generally means more and more dispatchability. So intermittency and variability, those are two words that are kind of connected and get coupled, but they're slightly different. So of course, intermittent, meaning it's just not always there. And variability is a reflection of how much that, how intermittent is something. And so different renewable resources have different sort of characteristics around their variability. You know, the good one is solar, which has a very clear daily cycle to it, versus wind, which is a little more seasonal, a little more sort of characteristic variability over a year plus some really short time scale stuff. And then hydro as well. Hydro water supply is intermittent and variable, but that's typically, again, a fairly seasonal type of variability. So then the last word I mentioned, which is firm, and this really, I think, would capture those other two characteristics under one label. And so a utility, when they're evaluating options, or a system balancing authority, would really be interested in how firm is a supply option. Meaning, again, maybe it's not dispatchable. So this could be something like run-of-river hydro. It's not dispatchable. But if I know the characteristics, and the characteristic of a run-of-river facility is very repeatable, i.e. it typically every year at this time of year will be outputting 60%. It's not full, but I'm very confident in that timing and the delivery of that energy. So I would say that there's a certain level of firmness to it, even though it's a variable and a renewable resource. I'm going to probably add some value to it because I can count on it being available and supplying when I know I'm going to need a certain amount. So yeah, these terms are all really important.
Okay. Thank you, Andrew. That was a lot of really good information. I think you kind of mentioned three general solutions. We talked about storage, talked about diversifying our generation, and you talked about demand response. So I'm wondering, maybe we'll ask you a couple questions about each one of those specifically and get a little bit more information for the listeners here. So my first question, I guess, since we talked about storage first, would be how much storage do most places have on the grid, and what does it currently look like? You can think about things like generally, if you think about storage of electricity, you think about a battery, but are there any other alternatives that are widely used currently or possibly in the near future?
Yeah, there are, and there's some things we've become so used to, I don't think we think about them anymore. So for us, where we live, pretty common storage technologies that exist right now, which couple with our demand for energy service and electricity, depending on where you are, you might find a jurisdiction that actually has true dedicated storage for the balance of electricity supply. And this might be something like a pumped hydro facility. And these are really, again, pumped hydro is a lot like solar or wind in that it's a regionally specific solution. You need to have the space, you need to have the appropriate, you know, geography and elevation changes. It has to be located in a place that's easy to connect to. But this is something that's been used for quite some time as a way to store electricity.
So on that point, Andrew, we've talked about renewable energy kind of being difficult in terms of solar and wind being unpredictable, but Laura and I, I'm sure, are familiar with renewables that are able to respond to demand. Of course, the large one being hydroelectric power. So can you maybe comment a little bit on the ability of hydro to couple with some of these technologies to kind of shift around our consumption?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, we're now expanding the sort of palette of options that we're talking about. So initially it was about solar and wind, but you're absolutely right. Hydro, of course, is a renewable option and is used heavily in various places. And we really do deploy it using storage in reservoirs. So the water supply has its own characteristics in terms of seasonality, and because of that we build reservoirs to collect that water, and then we can dispatch and generate the electricity when we want to. So hydro has some really great characteristics in terms of its carbon footprint, especially in northern regions, and its dispatchability, its flexibility, the ability for us to use it as a way to balance this uncertain demand, and also to help balance things like wind and solar. So if you do decide you want to add a lot of wind and solar and you have some storage hydro available, you can start to use that hydro resource as a way to balance the availability of solar and wind, or the lack of supply that might come from that. So large hydro has that that built-in storage function, which is really valuable.
Andrew, you also mentioned about like changing the behavior of the end user with essentially it's us. And right now, how the electricity system is set up is that we are meeting the demand with the supply. But do you think people would respond like, no, don't charge your phone or your car in the morning because we don't have wind power at that time. You should charge it during the night because that's where we are forecasting that we're going to have power at that time. Do you think people will respond to that?
Yeah, so the idea of you know, controlling behavior or controlling demand more generally is a viable way to help do balancing. But there is a good question about what is the magnitude of that resource? Just how much can we do with demand response? And that's a question we still don't have good answers to. And ultimately, people are paying for electricity. We're being charged to get this service. And like most things, if we feel like what we're paying for is not making us satisfied, we might decide to buy something else. And so this comes up in discussions right now with utilities about customers defecting. And what this means is they basically decide that the service they're paying for, being provided by the utility, is not satisfying them. They feel that they can do it themselves, or they have an alternative they can invest in or buy that will make them happier.
So you mean like people will be able now to have something in-house in order to provide the electricity for them?
Yeah. A good example might be, okay, I feel like I'm paying too much money for this service I'm getting from my electrical utility. I'm going to buy my own solar and maybe my own little generator and maybe some storage, and that way I don't have to rely on the grid. And the problem then becomes that customer is now satisfying themselves, but we have a bunch of infrastructure that still needs to be paid for, the utility still needs to pay for, and there's a lot of other people who are still relying on that grid. And so then you get this feedback effect where fewer customers are paying for essentially the same infrastructure. That means the cost or the price has to go up. So demand response is a really interesting but complex solution to this problem. I think there is some value there. We do have demand response programs in many jurisdictions to help manage, especially these really short, high load periods that show up infrequently. Demand response can help manage that challenge for the utility and reduce the amount of. But the question is good, and I like I said, I think we're still trying to figure out what the actual magnitude of value we could have from demand response.
And Andrew, maybe just to give a real whirlwind explanation of some of these renewables and where they might stand on these factors, I might just, again, very generally, because this can change place to place, but you might say that hydroelectric dams with reservoirs are dispatchable and quite firm, and solar and wind are intermittent and very much less firm. And then there's also some other renewables that we could maybe quickly put somewhere on this spectrum, such as geothermal power being more firm and less intermittent. So I guess really when we're talking about problems with intermittency and renewables, it's really just solar and wind power, very generally. Does that sound fair?
Yeah, I think that's a really good summary. You know, when we started to build the electricity system 120 years ago, 140 years ago, you know, it began as a large number of small distributed generation units serving small local loads. And then over time, what happened is we started to interconnect them using the transmission and distribution infrastructure we were building. And we did that because of reliability and controllability and dispatch and trying to solve these problems in a least cost way. So it's interesting that we now are thinking about perhaps doing a little bit more of the reverse instead of integration over large areas, going to sort of microgrids. Where we'll land as the final solution, I don't think there is any one answer. We're really going to deploy a suite of different ways to manage dynamics, and the dynamics are coming from all sides now, supply and demand.
Wow, Andrew, that was amazing. I think this episode, it's everything that everyone needed to hear in terms of renewable energy and intermittency, and why we cannot just put a bunch of solar panels and bunch of wind farms to cover our needs. So I just want to thank you so much for being here.
Okay, well, thanks, Laura and Graham for doing this and for having me on.
Yeah, we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Adios.